now with the latest from the world of technology. This is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
I quite like the number of apps that are already available.
Tech Guide.
The iPad 2 still beats just about everything on the market. The new iPad has just kicked away even further.
Tech Guide.
I quite enjoyed using it. Great design. The operating system worked hand in hand with the hardware as well.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is obviously a hot-selling device.
Tech Guide.
You know, we want them to be light, we want them to be portable, and this one's very fast with i7 and i5 processors.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Hello, and welcome to episode 41 of the Tech Guide Podcast, which gives you the latest consumer tech news and reviews. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. It's great to have your company. I'm Stephen Fenwick, editor of techguide.com.au. On this week's program, we'll start off with Vodafone's 4G plans for Australia. We'll move on to Twitter and reports about the number of fake followers on the social networking site. We'll also chat about the new Facebook Home interface coming later this week for Android smartphones. In the Tech Guide reviews, we'll check out the new Magellan cycling computers. We'll also run our eye over the latest Call of Duty Black Ops 2 downloadable multiplayer content. Very excited about that. The latest BlackBerry Z10 smartphone, and also check out Belkin's brand new iPad keyboard case. And we'll wrap it up with your questions on the Tech Guide Help Desk. And it's all brought to you by our proud sponsors, Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi products. You're listening to Tech Guide. Well, we'll kick off the show this week with news from Vodafone and word that it's going to roll out its much-anticipated 4G network starting in June. The news came as a not pleasant surprise for Vodafone customers. We've been waiting for quite a while before for their 4G network after, of course, Optus and Telstra have already rolled out theirs. Now, customers from Vodafone will be able to enjoy 4G, or otherwise known as LTE, which is short for long-term evolution, in major metropolitan centres, Sydney, Perth, Melbourne, Brisbane, Adelaide, Wollongong, Newcastle, and the Gold Coast. So customers will be able to enjoy faster data and connection speeds. But this is on top of existing 3G enhancement work that's been going on across the network for the past 2 years. Now, Vodafone, they do acknowledge the fact that they're still winning their customers back. Their customer satisfaction. That's taken a bit of a dip in recent years with their network woes, which have been very widely publicised. A lot of customers have actually left the network because their services weren't matching up to what was promised. But it does sound like good news, though, that Vodafone have finally given us a date for their 4G service to commence, and that's only a couple of months away. What are we now, April, May, June? Only a couple of months away from the 4G network kicking off here in Australia. Their CEO, Bill Morrow, said that a lot of the feedback from customers played a big part in determining the planning of the 4G network. So it's good to hear that Vodafone are listening to their customers. Vodafone have already existing promises in place. They've got a network promise. So if you do take out a new plan with Vodafone, including the very latest handsets in the market at the moment, you're given a network promise that if you're not satisfied with either the handset or the network in 30 days, you can actually return it and only pay for the services that you've used. So Vodafone backing themselves, good to see. Backing themselves also with 4G. A lot of customers will be very happy to see that finally coming through, and especially now that Vodafone are offering all the latest handsets, including the HTC One, the next iPhone, the Galaxy S4 is just around the corner. All of these are 4G devices, so customers will be looking forward to those. So 4G Vodafone in June. Full report at techguide.com.au.
This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Just how many Twitter followers do you have? And if you rattle off the number that appears on the screen when you log into Twitter, you may be surprised to find that a good portion of those followers are actually fakes. This follows some news that came out of the New York Times a couple of days ago revealing that Twitter has more than 20 million fake users. So while having a lot of followers can make you look very important and look quite influential, there is a proportion of those users that are actually robots, so that are just fake clients built either to automatically follow people, built also to be possibly sold off in batches. There are companies that offer numbers of followers, so you can add to your numbers. So you can buy up to as little as 100, 200, 1,000, even up to 1 million followers if you're willing to pay the price. And it only starts off for hundreds and up to 1,000 and above, as little as $5 to $10 to get these followers on your account. Problem being, though, that a lot of these followers are fake. Now, the way we can tell an account is fake is the fact that some of them don't have a profile picture. Some of them don't even tweet. They've got way more. They're following way more people than they have followers. The really good fakes, though, they look like real people. They've got real profile pictures and bios, and even tweet and retweet on occasion, share links, things like that. But these are just programmed through software or through computer systems from these companies that sell these hordes of fake followers. It's a growing industry. So if you've got a lot of your Twitter followers, you can actually examine. There's a couple of websites where you can actually type in your username to check out the number of fake followers that you have. One of these sites is called Status People. I'll put a link on Tech Guide. There's another one called Social Baker. And what we did, we conducted a little experiment. We decided to type in the names of some of the top people on Twitter, the most followed people on Twitter, the likes of Justin Bieber, Lady Gaga, Katy Perry, and President Barack Obama. Now, Justin Bieber has 37,181,000 followers and growing, but we typed his name into the Status People site and found that up to 45% of that figure are fake followers. Same deal for Lady Gaga. She's got 35,881,000 followers, up to 45% fake followers, according to Status People. Katy Perry, 34,645,000 followers, up to 55% are fake followers. The President, Barack Obama, 29,458,000 followers, has been found, according to this site, we should mention again, Status People, has up to 50% fake followers. Fake it till you make it. It is a surprising number. So if you're curious about your standing in the Twitterverse, you can feel free to type your name into the Status People site. Now, there have been some interesting cases where people have been caught out buying extra followers. One was last year when presidential candidate Mitt Romney was accused of buying more than 100,000 followers ahead of the election to make himself appear more popular and more viral. Previously to that, Newt Gingrich, another US politician, was also accused of doing the same thing back in 2001. Now, we know how important social media is in elections. Now, we've got an election coming up here in Australia, and the battle is going to be fought on social media, a large part of it, especially the parties were targeting the young voters, the youth vote. I think the Rudd campaign back in 2007 really played that very well and won a huge chunk of the youth vote, because this is where they played, this is where they targeted a lot of their campaign on those mediums. And that's where the youth of today are living and talking and discussing these what's happening around them and discussing these issues. And it's obviously, so having a decent Twitter following and being, well, the appearance of a decent Twitter following is a very important thing. Feel free if you want to. There's links to Status People and Social Baker on the Tech Guide story. If you want to check out exactly how many followers you have that are real and that are fake. Well, moving from Twitter to the other major social network, to Facebook, and it was an interesting announcement late last week. They had an event where Mark Zuckerberg hosted this announcement, and the announcement that was made was the fact that Facebook had released a new product, I'll call it, called Facebook Home. And what it basically is, it's a tool for an Android smartphone. So rather than you just using the Facebook app, you install Facebook Home on your Android device, and it sort of creates a social skin over your Android device. So rather than you having to dive into the app to find out your latest notifications, your status updates from your friends, you can access all this sort of information on your phone's lock screen or on your wallpaper. You'll be able to chat as well. So if you can dive in and out of apps and still chat with your Facebook friends as well. So rather than you, as I said, just diving in and concentrating just on using the app itself, Facebook Home is like a combination of apps that can bring all of the notifications and content and messages that brings them to the top layer of the device, and so they're there as part of your experience on your Android smartphone. This includes even pictures that are shared now become pictures on your lock screen and even your home screen. Notifications that pop up in the middle of the screen, you see pictures of the friend that is actually sharing that content with you, and other messages appearing at the top of the screen while you're performing other functions on the smartphone. Now, iPhone has a fairly deep integration with Facebook. You do see notifications coming through at the top of the screen if you have allowed those notifications in the settings. But this takes it a little bit further on the Android front with Facebook Home. It allows for a little bit more of a takeover of the device, if you like. Something that obviously Apple don't allow. They do allow a certain amount of integration, but now this Facebook Home product allows you to take an even deeper integration of Facebook into your Android device. And let's face it, if you're heavily into Facebook and really keen to keep up with the latest statuses and content that's being shared, then Facebook Home may be very appealing to you. It's going to be available from April the 12th, which is later this week, and it'll be available. It will work with the HTC One, the HTC One X, the Samsung Galaxy S3, the upcoming Samsung Galaxy S4, and the Galaxy Note 2. So it's mainly HTC and Samsung that are allowing this compatibility. No news on whether other devices like the Sony Xperia Z, the LG Optimus G will allow this as well, but time will tell. But if you do want to look at some screenshots and check out also a short video to explain how Facebook Home looks and works, then feel free to check out our story at techguide.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
The Tech Guide podcast is proudly sponsored by Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi gear. Are there any Wi-Fi black spots in your home? Well, now you can enjoy improved Wi-Fi coverage on your Wi-Fi devices, such as tablets and smartphones, throughout your entire home with Netgear's new dual-band Wi-Fi range extender. The WN3500RP will boost dual-band Wi-Fi to the backyard or upstairs bedroom and wirelessly stream music to your connected audio system with AirPlay on an iPhone or iPad or any Android device using the Netgear Genie app and DLNA. If you want to find out how to boost your Wi-Fi, head over to netgear.com.au/boost-my-Wi-Fi.
Tech Guide now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Fenwick.
Now, I know there are plenty of cyclists out there who love to hit the road, and they also love to hit the road with a little bit of technology, and the cycling computer is that piece of technology that they do love to include on their ride. Now, Magellan, which is a company we know already from their GPS devices, also GPS apps for smartphones, they've come up with a brand new range of cycling computers that have included a high sensitivity GPS receiver. And what that basically means is that GPS, which may surprise some people, is a very accurate way of measuring speed. Not only can it gauge your location, but once it has speed, once there's a clock on board and it knows your location, it can perform quite a fair few functions and also take a fair few measurements, including time, speed, distance, altitude, cadence, and calories burned. These devices are called the Cyclo Range, and they have a 1.8-inch anti-glare screen and have a battery that lasts up to 18 hours. The screen has also an anti-glare coating, so you can look at it quite clearly in all kinds of conditions. Now, there's cyclists that love to sort of track their rides, and the beauty of the Magellan devices is the fact that you can actually upload the data that it captures and use a Magellan desktop tool to analyze it. You can also share it on other sites like Map My Ride, Training Peaks, and Magellan Active. It allows you to mount the device either in portrait or landscape mode. You can even view that information in portrait or landscape mode just to suit that how that's mounted on your handlebars. And it can also display up to 6 measurements that can be seen at once, things like your speed, your distance, the time you've been riding, your cadence, even your heart rate. The higher models, they start at $149, the Cyclo 100. The Cyclo 105 is $179, but the top of the line Cyclo 105HC actually has a built-in sensor, and it also includes a heart rate monitor, so you can add your heart rate to those measurements as well. It also has a cadence and speed sensor kit, so you're getting full measurement while you're riding. Now, there's a lot of riders out there who do like to keep track of what they're doing. Magellan has provided a unit here that can do it quite accurately, and because it's using GPS, it's quite an accurate thing as well. Now, these are the Cyclo series will be available through major retailers at the end of April. And those prices again: the Cyclo 100, $149; Cyclo 105, $179; the Cyclo 105HC, top of the line, at $279. If you want to take a look at our report and also images of the products, you can do so at techguide.com.au.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Now, here's a subject very close to my heart. One of my favorite games is Call of Duty. And the very latest game, Black Ops 2, has already had one set of DLC, downloadable content for multiplayers. And Activision and Treyarch, the developers of the game, have announced a second downloadable multiplayer pack called Uprising. Now, Uprising includes 4 new multiplayer maps, as well as a new zombie game. Now, zombies was a very popular addition to the first Black Ops game. People really responded to it, hence the reason why it is a very popular inclusion on Black Ops 2. But the Uprising pack, as I said, 4 multiplayer games. The first, Magma, is set in a Japanese village, and for the very first time, there's a new danger to keep an eye out for players, and that's lava. This is set in a small Japanese village where a volcano has erupted. Lava is flowing through the town, and apart from you keeping an eye out and looking out for the enemy, you've also got to make sure you don't take a wrong step and get killed by the lava. Moving on, the second the downloadable map is Encore, which takes place in a London stadium. That's one of the things that really fascinate me and that I really enjoy about the Black Ops 2 maps is their locations. The previous first downloadable pack, there was one that's a particularly good map that's set in a skateboard park. So it's called Grindr, set in a skateboard park at Venice Beach. So very interesting landscape to take place for your games. Now, Encore is in a London stadium, so there's a stage, elevated seating position, so plenty of short, close combat, long-range action for all types of players. Moving on, Studio is set in a movie backlot, and this takes its inspiration from a map in the first Black Ops game called Firing Range. Now, what it's done, it's actually taken that a step further and set it in a Hollywood studio backlot so that you among the areas you're moving are sets to sci-fi movies, westerns, and all types of other sets that have been built for these movies. And you have to do battle amongst these sets. The last of the downloadable maps is called Vertigo. It's set in an Indian high-rise building that allows players to jump across these chasms from one girder to the next, and one false move, you fall down, you're dead, which is a pretty dizzying experience, hence the name Vertigo. Now, the new zombie map, Mob of the Dead. Now, this is going to be very popular. This is almost a game within the game, and it is a zombie game that is set on the prison island of Alcatraz in the during the Prohibition era. Palminteri, Joe Pantoliano, and Michael Madsen. Pretty good roll call of talent there, but they're the mobsters that have to really rely on their weapon skills, their experience in the mob to thwart the rising zombie threat on Alcatraz. Call of Duty Black Ops 2, just as a reminder, is an MA-15-plus game. Very strong violence, coarse language, not for the kiddies, but the adult users will love it. The DLC pack is available from April 17 on the Xbox 360 and a month later on the PlayStation 3. Something to keep an eye out for. You'll find me out there playing on the PS3. I won't get it straight away. I'm going to need to wait a month, so probably April, late April for me. But I am a big fan of Call of Duty and can't wait to get my hands on these new maps. Well, on Tech Guide last week, we published our review of the highly anticipated BlackBerry Z10 smartphone, and I've lost count of the number of people who've asked me my opinion of this device before I posted my review. Now that I have posted my review, those inquiries thankfully have stopped because they can read my actual review. But a lot of people were asking me, is it any good? Should I buy it? And the majority of these users were asking me, these people are coming from their existing BlackBerry users. And for an existing BlackBerry user, I would highly recommend it. The BlackBerry Z10 is a touchscreen device. It's got a 4.2-inch screen, a very sleek product, running a new operating system, the BB10 operating system. Now, this device comes after a series of failures. And by failures, I mean in the touchscreen space. Ever since the iPhone appeared, other companies have been trying to produce a decent smartphone, many with great success, others not so much. BlackBerry's in the not so much category. They produced a device called the Storm, two versions, two goes they had at it, both miserable failures, the Storm products. Unfortunately, it kind of set BlackBerry back in the market. Android came along, iOS, iPhone grew in popularity, and these are the two dominant platforms today. BlackBerry has since slipped. Unfortunately, I think because of these missteps in the past, but the Z10, I have to say, is a massive improvement. Finally proves that BlackBerry can produce a worthy touchscreen device, worthy of its competition. Unfortunately, I don't see the Z10 as a product that's going to drag users away from Android and iPhone. It may be the case. There may be some people who want to give BlackBerry another go, but I'd say the majority of users are going to be existing BlackBerry users who want to stay within that ecosystem and still retain the DNA of the BlackBerry system with this new device, which it does successfully include. Now, we should mention the fact that the product itself doesn't have any buttons whatsoever. It's all gesture control. So gestures in from the edges of the screen, access your apps, go to your hub, which is the central part of the device where you can look at your messages, your emails, your BBMs, all of those, that hub that you look at where all your messages come into one place. There are plenty of apps too. BlackBerry says there are more than 70,000 apps that will work on the device. So all the majors there, of course, your Facebooks, your Twitters, all the major apps that are available on Android and also on the iPhone are available on BlackBerry. So if it's an excuse that there aren't enough apps, then that's not an excuse at all because there's more than 70,000 of them on the device. It's got a 4.2-inch display, as I said, with 1280 by 768 high-definition resolution. The screen actually looks pretty sharp. The device itself is quite fast. The performance is really good. Battery lasts you a full day. No better or worse than other smartphones on the market. If you take it off the charger in the morning when you go to work, you'll have plenty of charge left by the end of the day. One of my favorite features, though, of the Z10 is the keyboard. Now, there's a lot of people who were BlackBerry customers or remain BlackBerry customers because of that ultra-reliable physical QWERTY keyboard on the device. Well, for those of you who worried about not having that physical keyboard, rest assured the keyboard, the virtual keyboard on the Z10, is probably one of the best virtual keyboards I've used on a touchscreen device. Reason I say that is because the system is built in with a predictability function. So it gets to know what you type, how you type, the words you use, and it can actually anticipate the words that you're going to use in your sentence. So if you're typing out a sentence, the words that it thinks you're going to use next or maybe later in the sentence appear above the corresponding first letter of that number. So if you want to type the word think, that word will likely be hovering above the letter T. And all you need to do is sweep up on the T and think. The word think is included in your sentence. It really makes typing through emails and messages really – it helps you do it really quickly. As I said, one of the best experiences on a virtual keyboard. So if those are going to have separation anxiety from the physical keyboard of their BlackBerry, the Z10 keyboard, you'll be pleasantly surprised, is actually quite accurate and really easy to use. Another feature on the Z10 that we should mention is time shift. Now, this is a camera functionality. There is an 8-megapixel camera, and what time shift does, it captures images a few milliseconds before. When you open the camera function, it's capturing images every couple of seconds and does so a couple of milliseconds before you hit the shutter and a couple of seconds after you capture the image. And what that allows you to do is to look at the faces of the people in your photograph. If they're not smiling, they may have their eyes closed. You can actually go back and forward in time and that little when that image was taken to get there. If you can see they're smiling at one point, you can select that to make that portion of the photograph even better. So just one of the many features on board. There is a full review at techguide.com.au. The Z10 is available now through Telstra and Optus. But as I said, if this device was out 3 or 4 years ago, if they had produced this not long after the iPhone was released and when every company was producing a touchscreen device, I think you'd see a greater market share for BlackBerry. Unfortunately, they didn't. But for anyone who's looking to stay within the BlackBerry ecosystem, the Z10 is a good choice. If you're an existing BlackBerry user, I think this is a good choice to move up to. If you may be new to the smartphone market, you may want to try a smartphone. The simple gesture controls make it pretty intuitive, pretty simple, although it does add up to a couple of extra keystrokes and touches of the screen to do the same thing on other devices. The Z10, as I said, available on contract with Telstra and Optus, and you can read the full review at techguide.com.au. Belkin has produced an iPad keyboard case, which will be released in May. Now, what it does, it as its name suggests, it's not only a keyboard, it's also a case. So for those of you who want to include a keyboard when you're carrying around your iPad, the Belkin product allows that. So what it allows you to do is to set up the keyboard in front of the iPad screen. So you're typing on it, looking so it looks like a laptop. But once you're done your typing and you maybe want to watch a movie or read a book, you can easily fold the keyboard behind the screen and enjoy the iPad without the keyboard in the way. The good thing about the Belkin product is that it's quite thin. The keyboard is actually only 6.4 millimeters thick. So this isn't a really bulky product that's going to add a lot of weight and bulk to the device. The Belkin product allows you also to angle the screen at a certain way. So if you want to watch a movie or read, it allows you to do that as well. Keyboard itself, there's a very well-spaced keys, so it's comfortable if you're typing. What I've found with the iPad is that while it's a great content consumption device, for reading books and watching movies and also surfing the web, when it comes time to get down to work, you often need a keyboard underneath your fingers. There's plenty of people who use this as a laptop replacement tool, and having that keyboard under your fingers can make you get through a fair bit of work if you do need to type out documents or answer emails and things like that on the go. The Belkin Ultimate Keyboard Case is available from May 13. It'll be priced at $139.95, and I've put a little video and also some images of what the product looks like at techguide.com.au.
Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
Today's Tech Guide Help Desk question is all around noise-cancelling headphones. I get a lot of people asking me, what do I need to look for in a noise-cancelling headphone? What do they do? Where will I use them? How much should I spend? Well, let's start off with what they are. Noise-cancelling headphones, as the name suggests, headphones that cancel the outside noise. There's active cancellation and also some with passive cancellation. Active cancellation means there's technology built into the product that can detect the outside noise and generate a wavelength to cancel it out. Bose, for example, have a series of microphones on the outside of each of the ear cups, can detect the outside noise and generate the opposite wavelength to cancel that noise. So when you there's a lot of ambient noise, say you're on public transport or on an aeroplane, you can filter all that noise out and allow you to listen to music or watch the movie without the outside drone, the outside noise interrupting your experience. There are passive noise cancellation is basically just where the ear cup forms a bit of a seal around your ear, and that just physically then cuts your ear off from the outside world. It's like wearing a pair of earmuffs sort of thing, and what that allows you to do is cut out the noise that way. That's more passive noise cancellation, and these are obviously a little bit cheaper than the active noise cancellation. Active noise cancellation headphones require power too, so either a battery or an internal or a rechargeable battery on board. And once you run out of that, some of them do come with a cord so that you can actually listen without the noise cancellation function, but just still listen to them like a normal pair of headphones, a passive pair of headphones. In terms of in-ear headphones, there are some in-ear headphones that offer noise cancellation, but because of the active nature of noise cancellation, these tend to be a little bit bigger. I know Sony have a pair of in-ear noise cancellation headphones, but there does need to be a little bit of technology built into the headphone to provide that noise cancellation. Now, in terms of pricing, you pay for what you get. Now, if you do want to go the budget route, that can give you good value for money. They're budget reasonably priced, but offer a certain percentage of noise cancellation, say 85% to 90%. But if you're looking for true noise cancellation, you'd be looking at companies like Sony and Bose and other companies like that that offer like up to 95-96% noise cancellation. And if you've ever traveled on an aeroplane, you see a lot of people, a lot of experienced travelers that take along their own pair of noise cancellation headphones. You find a lot of them are Bose and those major companies that offer a good result. Then not only do they cancel the noise, but the sound quality is amazing. But there it is, noise cancellation headphones. If you're going on a trip, maybe a good investment. If you're a frequent traveler, something maybe that you might think about investing in. I never get on a plane without my Bose noise cancelling headphones. I use either the QC3s or the QC15s, and they always last me the entire trip and back again. The batteries last quite a while. So that's my favorite choice, and the choice of many other travelers. I know Bose is a very popular choice for those travelers. You're listening to Tech Guide. Well, we've run out of time in this week's show. If you want to read more about everything you've heard in this episode, you can head to our website, techguide.com.au. You can get in touch also by emailing us at info@techguide.com.au. And please send us your help desk questions either to on email or to the Tech Guide forum, where the questions are either answered by myself or loyal readers who can either find the answer to your problem or offer the advice you're looking for. And you never know, you maybe end up on the Tech Guide help desk here right on the podcast, us discussing the question that you've submitted. Special thanks too to our sponsors Netgear, the brand you can trust for all your Wi-Fi needs. Well, that's it for Tech Guide episode 41. Thanks for listening. We look forward to your company next week. So in the meantime, as I always say, stay safe and stay connected.